Hello, and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Raquel Williams. Of course, Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK Medical Center Emergency Medical Services provides advanced and basic life support ambulance service to communities throughout Central Jersey. They also provide basic life support transport, wheelchair transportation, and specialty care transport for all of Hackensack Meridian Health Network facilities. Joining us today is Michelle Kobayashi. She is Administrative Director of EMS and Emergency Community Operations at Hackensack University Medical Center EMS. Along with Michelle is Mark Bober, who is Director of JFK Medical Center EMS, and John Iazzetta, Operations Director of JFK Medical Center EMS. Welcome to the program, all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, this is a bit of a revisit with a lot of the crew here. We have visited with you guys before the pandemic. We talked to you a little bit during the pandemic. And now we kind of want to get a sense of how things are with the EMS, after pandemic. I mean, we're still in it, but we see the light at the end of the tunnel. Things are opening up and trying to, kind of get back to a sense of normalcy. And I would assume that that is affecting the way that you guys are doing your work. We'll get into all of that. But let's first talk about some of the things that we were talking about when we visited the first time. We were talking about the COVID. We want to hear all about the different stories that and the experiences that you've shared. But let's first talk about EMS. You know, I had a couple of questions about that. We know that you guys are often first time on the scene. What's the job of the EMS entail, and how is it different from EMTs?
So that's an interesting question, Raquel. I think ultimately EMTs are part of emergency medical services. Ultimately, there is a basic life support level and a paramedic or advanced life support level. In New Jersey, that two-tiered system is relatively unique. And ultimately, when somebody calls 911, the emergency medical dispatcher determines whether a basic life support ambulance alone needs to respond to the assignment or a basic life support and an advanced life support paramedic unit need to respond in tandem. That is largely determined by the acuity or the severity of the injury or the illness, and things like strokes, heart attacks, unconscious, difficulty breathing. Those higher severity illnesses and injuries are the ones that always get the paramedics as well. So sometimes you may get one ambulance in front of your house, sometimes you might get two, but ultimately is the goal is to make sure that the help that you get is paired up with the experience that you're having, and make sure that we are bringing the hospital to the patient's doorstep.
All right. Well, thanks for clearing that up. I knew there was a distinction and a difference, but of course there are similarities too. So I appreciate you going through that. I have a question for all three of you. You can just hop right in. We'll start with Michelle. How long have you all been doing this in the world of EMS? Michelle?
Well, so me personally, I started in EMS when I was 16 years old, became an EMT when I was in high school, and then went to nursing school, and I am now, I've been with Hackensack University Medical Center for 24 years, and I've been with the EMS department here since 2014.
Okay, great. Mark, yourself?
I started a little bit later in life. I took my first EMT class when I was attending college at Penn State University. That's where I became an EMT. Mm-hmm. After that, I worked in the private EMS sector before becoming a paramedic and eventually landed here at JFK in 2010. So I've been here going on my 11th year, but been in EMS since about 2003.
All right. And John, what about you?
I started out in EMS very much like Michelle in high school on a volunteer first aid squad, and I've been working in EMS for 31 years.
Oh, okay. So all of you have quite a bit of experience in EMS, decades of experience in this for sure. I'm wondering what pulled you to it? We often talk, you know, the times that we've been together talking about EMS, we always talk about the kind of person it takes to be this, but I never asked all of you or any of you, what drew you to this line of work? I mean, obviously, it's extremely rewarding, but it has its challenges and dangers, of course.
Well, I'll tell you, Raquel, when I was 16, like Michelle, the reason that I joined my local volunteer first aid squad is that I was just beginning to apply to different colleges, and I had heard that volunteerism was looked on favorably on college applications. Mm-hmm. I had never dreamed of getting into EMS or even the medical field. I just wanted to get into college. So I joined a local first aid squad, and I quickly realized that I loved it. it became my life calling, my life's calling, probably within a year or two. And I just haven't been able to step away from EMS since joining that first aid squad as a teenager.
Wow. What about you, Mark?
So for me, it was a little bit different. As I said, I was already in college. I wanted to volunteer and help out, and I was also studying along a pre-med track. So to kind of get my hands in the game as far as patients go and really start to experience some of the things that I had read about but never actually seen in person. And from there, it's very similar to John's story. Once you get bit by the EMS bug, it's very, very difficult to think about doing anything else with your life. The excitement of the job, the challenges of the job, knowing that you get to step into somebody's life and often on their worst day, establish a rapport and come to their aid and do the best you can to make that day a little bit better for them. It is intoxicating. I won't lie.
Wow, what a description. Michelle, intoxicating, would you call it that?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I don't actually know why I joined the ambulance corps. I was literally sitting outside the building and the door was open and I walked in and got an application.
Wow.
I thought, no, I had no knowledge about it. I had no idea what it was about. I just kind of walked in and the rest was history. Working in the hospital as a nurse in the ER and the ICU for several years, when I came back to EMS, it was like coming home.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome. Well, it's obvious that all three of you are passionate about the work that you do. So let's talk about the work that you do and how the pandemic actually challenged you guys and all the challenges that are associated with the coronavirus. How did it change the way you do your normal routine? How has EMS changed because of the pandemic?
Well, I got to tell you, Raquel, it definitely changed essentially the entire healthcare landscape, and emergency medical services, pre-hospital EMS, was definitely not spared from all of those changes. Mm-hmm. Our team members, the frontline team that is in the ambulances, interacting with the patients, very quickly came to realize that nearly every scene you went to, every assignment you responded to, you would encounter at least one patient who was suffering from COVID, especially during the first and the second wave. We may be called to a residence for a single resident who was experiencing some significant symptoms, but even as we're approaching the doorway, we could tell that other people within that same house were already ill as well, but maybe not suffering as much and not needing to go to the hospital. So our index of suspicion every single time we went on an assignment was so high that we were donning all of the personal protective equipment regardless of what type of nature we were responding to. So even a motor vehicle accident during the first wave, you could encounter occupants of the motor vehicle who were COVID positive. It became quite difficult during the first wave. We had a bit of a lull last summer. And but in EMS, we were not lulled into a false sense of security. We kind of assumed that the second wave would be coming, so we remained protected throughout. And then all throughout the second wave, we were dealing with such high positivity rates that every patient we encountered seemed to have COVID, or we assumed would have COVID. And at the end of the day, it increased our volume. So our team members, they were putting themselves in dangerous situations day in and day out just because there was so much unknown, especially in the beginning. And they were valiantly coming in every day, responding to all of these assignments. Each one of those assignments would take a lot longer because the team had to don all of their protective equipment upon arriving at the scene. And then after clearing the scene, after we transported the patient to the hospital, they had to fully decontaminate the ambulances to a level that we really never had to do in the past. And oftentimes it would take upwards of a half an hour for our team to decontaminate the ambulance. So in essence, the frontline team members were working nonstop during the entire pandemic, whether they were responding to a higher volume of calls or they were spending so much time cleaning the ambulances so that the next patient wouldn't have to worry about being exposed. It was quite a challenging year and a half, but I think we're all very, very happy to say that we appear to have made it through to the other side, and we've all learned a lot.
Can I also add that not only were we asked to do our EMS jobs, but the hospitals and health systems really found value in EMS providers and our unique skill set. We were asked whenever possible to come in and supplement staffing in ICUs, in emergency departments, as part of the rounding teams with respiratory therapy, because we were so familiar with lifting and moving patients and with high acuity emergencies. We were really in high demand and asked to give extra time even beyond the EMS role wherever we could. And even today, as the world opens up and we're able to take our masks off in public settings, there really hasn't been a lot of relaxation as far as the mandates for healthcare goes. So while we're all out there enjoying the fact that the pandemic's grip has relaxed on so many aspects of our lives, the job is just as hard in healthcare right now, and I give credit to our teams for sticking with it, even at times when the rest of the world is coming back to normal.
Well, I have to say, we do appreciate all the work that you do, and thank you for continuing to push forth while, like you said, we were, you know, doing what we had to do to try to be safe. And of course, if you guys were doing the same thing, except you go into the dangerous situations while trying to be safe. And that's really challenging. But we do thank you for that. How are health networks like Hackensack Meridian Health incorporating EMS into post-pandemic recovery efforts now?
So I could speak to some of the work that we're doing there. It's very exciting, actually. It's been wonderful to see the recognition of what EMS brings to the healthcare workforce come out of the pandemic. That's one of the positives for us, I believe. So we've been working both with JFK EMS and Hackensack EMS with the mobile vaccine clinics. So one of the challenges that we had as a network was our long-term care facilities and making sure that all of our patients were vaccinated and our team members as well. And so we put together the mobility of EMS with the strength of the network, and we're able to get out there and reach those patients who maybe couldn't have gotten vaccinated in the first round or were discharged and brought into the system after that first round of long-term care vaccination was done. And so we've had an ongoing effort from April through June where the EMS providers were trained in vaccine administration. We were able to go into the nursing homes, meet with team members, patients, and administer vaccines so that we can make sure that those very vulnerable populations are as protected as they can be from COVID.
Okay. All right. So that's different that now that you guys have kind of switched over to administering vaccines. So is that something that's going to continue throughout the rest of the year?
So, yeah, so we're continuing to be able to do that. They are actually working on strategies to have the vaccine immediately available at our long-term care facility. So we will be handing off the responsibility for the long-term care vaccination program to those teams. Now that vaccine is becoming more available and the tracking process is kind of nailed down and how we're doing that, we're able to help those teams self-sustain so that we can help in other ways. We do a lot of vaccine monitoring. We work with pop-up clinics with our network targeted locations, especially underserved populations. We've gone out to, as a network, we've gone out to churches and community centers, and our EMTs and medics have been involved in those programs as well.
And Michelle, what exactly is ET3, and what does that mean for the communities that you guys are going in?
Sure. So ET3 is a pilot program for Medicare. And what it does is it gives us more choices as EMS to deliver care in the setting that's best appropriate for that patient, right? So not every patient that calls 911 when we get there and assess them actually needs to go to an emergency room. But the system is set up right now where it only functions if you take the patient to the emergency room. Otherwise, they have to sign against advice, and that's the only way for them to stay home. And that's just really not effective for patients. That's not the best way for people to get the care that they need. Sometimes they just don't know, right? If they're not familiar with medical care, they don't exactly know what they need. So they call 911. We want that. We want people to call the system, bring in the support, the medical support they need in their homes. And so when we get there, if the patient has something that's very minor, right? For example, sometimes a cut that looked like it was really bad, it was bleeding a lot, and was it arterial? Oh my gosh, do we need the tourniquet? It slows down and it turns out to be more minor. Those types of things. What we're able to do with this pilot is we'll be able to bring telemedicine into the home. So our paramedics and our EMTs will be able to talk with physicians with the patient. That's new. Okay. That's not something we're doing right now in the emergency setting. Having that advice from a physician, like, oh, that doesn't look, you know, that rash doesn't look terrible. It doesn't look awful. Maybe we can prescribe you a medication that you can take and we'll send it to your pharmacy and you can stay home and go to your pharmacy and get your medication.
Right.
This has been available through like our Convenient Care Now program, for example. Their telehealth has been available, especially got that bump through, you know, the pandemic with making sure that, you know, we have access to care. And bringing it into the emergency setting is what ET3 does. The other thing it will do is it'll allow us to go to places like urgent cares, right? Something that's minor. If the patient doesn't want to go to the ER and they'd rather go to an urgent care, now EMS can assist them with getting to that urgent care. So we're hoping as we get this program prepared that we'll be able to get that in place so that the residents of New Jersey and the visitors to New Jersey here can, you know, take advantage of that and receive care at the most appropriate setting.
So ET3 was actually birthed out of the pandemic. Is this where it came from?
No. ET3 actually is from a pilot program that was done through CMS, through the CMMI Innovation Program.
Okay.
It's been tested in different locations throughout the country and was very successful. So before the pandemic, they put out a call for applications, and we did apply, both JFK and Hackensack EMS applied and were awarded participation. And the plan for that was to get these things in place. We call treat in place, with, like I said, the telemedicine at home or the alternative destination, which is going to the urgent care center or even to a doctor's office. And those two choices were actually used by waiver during the pandemic, the treat in place specifically, of not having to go to the hospital, of using telemedicine and being able to stay home and not have to go to the ER.
Mm-hmm.
That piece, you know, had we had that in place, had the pilot program been a couple years earlier, we would have been prepared for the pandemic. I think the pandemic taught us it's time to change the way we've been delivering healthcare. It's time to innovate. It's time to make it different so it can be better suited.
Right, right. And it seems like it came right on time because you guys were able to use it during the pandemic and it made a lot of sense. So this sounds like it's pretty exciting.
It certainly is. From our perspective as sort of veterans in the healthcare industry and specific to EMS, the idea that somebody picks up the phone, calls 911, and we take them to the hospital has been the only option for the workflow for so long. And you keep hearing us use the phrase access to care. To us, that's what EMS is all about. It's all about bringing care to people and matching people up with the right settings for their care. So to have this shift in the paradigm, to have these options soon to be available to us where the trip doesn't just have to end with an emergency department visit because maybe that's not the appropriate setting for the patient. To be able to do that after so many years of just having one option of how EMS can operate, it's exciting to people who have been in this field for a while. And the idea that we can do a better job of matching up the needs of the patient with the capabilities of EMS, that's something that we're all very interested in making work. So I agree. These capabilities certainly would have helped if they were in place prior to the pandemic. But as we've seen in the pandemic, people are more interested in other options for healthcare. When it was a little bit dangerous for people to go to the hospitals because of the high number of COVID patients, they became more interested in the telemedicine option and in the option of being seen in alternate locations. And ultimately, those times may be past at this point. Healthcare is definitely safe. The message is definitely come back. If you've been putting off medical emergencies, the time is now to stop putting them off. The time is now to seek the care that maybe you've put on hold for a little while. The hospitals are safe. The COVID censuses are entirely, entirely low. And ultimately, these are tools that we're going to have in the toolbox for the next time something like this occurs and in between when it just makes more sense to treat a patient in a different setting.
Maybe you can talk a little bit more, John, about the role that EMS is playing in returning patients to the care that they need and also bridging that gap between healthcare and the community.
Sure. I think that that's something that is making the healthcare providers out there the most nervous, is that as we've discussed and as everybody is beginning to realize, with vaccinations, and with more and more people getting vaccinated, hopefully the coronavirus pandemic is behind us. Hopefully we will be returning to what it was like in 2018 and 2019 before we all learned about corona. What is definitely lagging a bit behind, though, is people accessing the care that they should be getting and under the timeline that they should be getting it. For a year and a half during Corona, people were scared, and they felt like every single patient in the hospital was exposed or actively fighting Corona, and maybe I'm not, or COVID, and maybe I'm not, mm-hmm. so I don't want to go to the hospital, right. or I don't want to go to my doctor's office. And the problem with that is that routine health maintenance is essential to people out there every day. And if you're delaying care, you're only making those nagging diseases, whether it's high blood pressure or diabetes, where you're not on insulin every day, but you're taking pills every day. And if you're not seeing a doctor and getting regular visits, those disease processes are progressing, despite the fact that you may not realize how bad they've progressed. So in healthcare in general, we have to, and EMS is participating through public service announcements, through just communicating with the patients that we interact with that call 911, or even just some community events that we do, letting everyone know that healthcare is necessary. Healthcare is safe. It's safe now. And people really need to start getting back to seeing their doctor and going to the hospital when it's appropriate and not rolling the dice and waiting. Because when you wait, oftentimes things get a lot worse.
Absolutely. And, you know, finally, Mark, perhaps you can bring it on home and talk a little bit about recruitment. You did say that your crew was growing. You guys have more responsibility, more in the community, doing things with vaccinations. Are you currently recruiting for EMS responders right now?
Raquel, we are always recruiting for EMS responders, both JFK Medical Center and Hackensack University Medical Center. Let me tell you, if there is a role to play that is in demand and the workforce is in shortage, it is EMS providers for sure. EMTs, paramedics, mobile intensive care nurses, anybody who can function in the pre-hospital environment. The training for these roles, compared to other technical jobs, is extensive and it is in depth. But ultimately, as we've talked about before, it is an incredibly rewarding career. Our teams are like families. When you're out there alone on the side of the road in the middle of the night, you have nobody but the person next to you to rely on. And ultimately, it makes us a very tight-knit group. We always take care of each other and are always very interested in indoctrinating the next round of EMTs, paramedics, and nurses into that family. And it is an exciting profession. There is nothing about it that allows you to have the same day twice. You're outside on a day like today, ultimately not confined to a desk or doing some of those monotonous tasks that other professions are. We are hiring. We are looking. We are always looking to put people through school and direct them on how they can become a part of the EMS family. And any of us can be contacted at any time for information regarding those opportunities.
And quickly, the characteristics of an EMS professional.
I would say hardworking, compassionate, patient, able to think quickly and arrive at correct decisions quickly, and ultimately interest in being part of something bigger than yourself.
I like that. Awesome. All right. Well, we've been talking with Michelle Kobayashi, Mark Bober, and also John Iazzetta. They are all with JFK Medical Center, Hackensack Meridian Health, Emergency Medical Services. Of course, they are recruiting. They're always recruiting. So if you would like to get more information on recruitment efforts and all the work that they do over at JFK, you can always contact them by going to their website at jfkmc.org. Thank you all for joining us today. We really appreciate your time as always. Be safe, and we thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you, Raquel.